From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. For Caswell, Hyman says he didn't set out to be a writer. Despite that, he spent years writing for Nickelodeon on the shows Little Bill, Tyena, and Gullah Gullah Island, among others. We'll hear about those years, but we're also here today to talk about his first middle grade novel, Mango Delight, and we'll find out what he thought he was setting out to do for a career before he unwittingly fell into a life of writing, which he now characterizes as writing for my life. For Caswell, Hyman is also an actor and has appeared locally in Big Dog Productions and most recently in August Wilson's Two Trains Running at Theater Now in Wilmington. What a pleasure it is to welcome you to Coastline for Caswell, Hyman.
Thank you, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. I'm happy to be here.
And we're inviting you to join the conversation on this Thursday. If you'd like to ask your own question for Caswell, Hyman, including how he fills the reservoir and moves through creative dry spells, give us a call during the live Thursday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. For Caswell, Hyman, you say you set out to be an actor. You studied in New York.
Yes. I studied at the Leonard Davis Center for Performing Arts when I was at City College in New York. And I studied around town, HB Studios, the Negro Ensemble Company. When I was a teenager, actually still in high school, I auditioned and got into the training program.
You were raised in Brooklyn.
I was raised in Brooklyn, so New York.
It was all right there for you. So yeah. Why do you not sound like that?
Because my parents are from Wilson, North Carolina. So I grew up saying coffee instead of coffee. So
how did you work in New York as an actor?
Yes, I did lots of off Broadway productions. I did the New York television stuff. You know, everybody who's in New York is in Law and Order a couple of times because that's where they shoot it. Lots of stuff like that, but mostly a lot of regional theater. I traveled a lot in those days.
So then how did you go from being an actor on the East Coast to being a writer on the West Coast? What happened?
Real story, my agent sent me to audition for a movie starring Harrison Ford that was supposed to be about the Pullman Porters. And I didn't know much about them, but one night I was sleeping and I heard this gong. It woke me up. I couldn't go back to sleep. I turned on the television. I saw this documentary about the Pullman Porters. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic. Next day I went to New York. I got the script and it was about Harrison Ford's kid being kidnapped and the Pullman Porters were kind of like way in the background. So on the way to audition, I canceled it. I told my agent, I was like, I don't want to do this. This has nothing to do with the Pullman Porters. I'm not interested. And her name was Dale Davis. And she said, well, honey, if you don't like what you're getting, you need to ride it. And I said, okay, maybe you're right. And I started working with this little theater company, 52nd Street Project, and they worked with kids from Hell's Kitchen area. And you would take the kid away for a weekend, write a play with the kid, come back, perform it off Broadway. And someone saw one of the plays I wrote, a woman named Miranda Berry, who was a producer at Children's Television Workshop, and she thought I had a good ear for the way kids spoke. And they called me in and ba-da-ba-boom.
And Children's Television Workshop, that was, is that part of PBS or?
It was the home of Sesame Street.
Yes.
And they're called Sesame Workshop now. But yeah, most of their shows were on PBS. And the first show I did there was a show entitled Ghostwriter. And it was a literacy mystery show. And that's where I cut my teeth.
And then you wound up writing for Gullah Gullah Island.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. I mean, that was with two characters who are from South Carolina.
Yes, Ron and Natalie Dace.
Yes.
They were storytellers and singers, and they were doing tours in South Carolina. And a producer, her name is Maria Perez Brown, and her partner, Kathy Minton, were looking for an idea, a hook for a show. And they actually went there, and they saw Ron and Natalie, and they built a show around them. And they did a pilot, it didn't work, but the network was interested, and then they were looking for a writer. And someone who had been my assistant on Ghost Rider had moved over to Nickelodeon, and she called and said, they're looking for writers. And I'm like, okay, send them my stuff. And I met them. We got along great. And
that show won a passel of awards, including a Writers Guild Award, a Daytime Emmy, multiple NAACP Image Awards. I mean, that really got some nice critical acclaim.
Yeah, and it was musical, and it also talked about the Gullah culture. And
those who aren't familiar with Gullah culture, tell us briefly what that is.
Well, Gullah culture, the people of the Sea Islands in South Carolina, they have a whole culture there, and they have a Gullah language that they speak. And it's a beautiful and rich culture. They had come in as slaves, but had run away and got away and created their own communities there. And it's still there, and it's still going strong. Ron and Natalie are still performing. And actually, their children now, the little baby that was on the show, there was a baby. And when he was like 1 and 2 years old, he is now a grown-up actor and writer. So
and
terrific.
Ron and Natalie, my husband and I saw them at Brook Green Gardens, which is in South Carolina, telling their Gullah Christmas story.
Yeah, they're wonderful people.
You also wrote for a show called Little Bill, and this was, this was based on Bill Cosby, and it was long before the allegations about sexual assault and rape that surround Mr. Cosby now.
Yes.
Can you kind of tell us how this show emerged and how you got involved in Little Bill?
Little Bill was a children's book that, a picture book that Bill Cosby had created. And he got the network, Nickelodeon, interested in turning it into a television series. And so I was brought on to turn the book into a series. So Little Bill in the book is like, you know, 7 or 8 or 9, and I made him 5 years old, gave him a sister, kind of filled out the whole family because they wanted it to be on Nick Jr. And it was a wonderful, wonderful show. It visually is wonderful. It's the show that most of the time when I run into people and they find out that I was connected with Little Bill, they really love that show a lot. It was my first animation show, which was really different for me, because when you do live action shows, you know, you write the scripts, you're there with the actors on the set, you're changing lines. When you do animation, you give in the script, and you know, maybe a year and a half later you see how it's come out. So it's not as immediate as doing live action.
Did you ever work with Bill Cosby during that production?
Bill Cosby would come in once or twice a season, and we would have a meeting with Mr. Cosby, and it was like watching a Bill Cosby concert, because you didn't really get to talk. He would just sit there, and he would talk and talk and talk, and it was, you know, sometimes it was very funny. I was always really shy around him, so I would put my laptop in front of me and pretend that I was just kind of writing down everything he said, but you didn't have to say much. He took up a lot of space.
How do you feel now? In light of all of these public allegations, was any of that rumored? Was it swirling around? And the reason I ask is because, you know, with the Harvey Weinstein allegations now, that was sort of an open secret in Hollywood. We're hearing now, I mean, yes, it's this torrent of people coming out and saying, here's my story. But people knew, it just wasn't dealt with, and he wasn't held accountable. Was that the case with Bill Cosby?
You know, maybe it was because I was working in children's television. And, you know, like I said, I saw Mr. Cosby once or twice a season. And he was busy out at Silver Cup Studios doing The Cosby Show at that time. So I really never knew those behind-the-scenes stories. But we weren't that closely connected. Perhaps if I was working on The Cosby Show and around him every day, I might have got an inkling of that. But no, I didn't know.
You know, you write about this show, Little Bill. I could hear all of their distinct voices in my head when you were talking about the characters that you were writing for. You say, I understood them and knew what they would and would not do. It got to the point where I sometimes wished little Bill were real so I could hug him and listen to him giggle all the time. In hindsight, I think this character played a big part in my wanting to become a father. First of all, hearing the characters' voices in your head, is that, do you need to get to that place where the characters are telling you what their story is for it to be a successful creative process, or was this sort of a unique experience?
No, I think that's always what happens. I hear them, and they come through me, you know, and that's why as head writer on that show, you know, I would come up with story ideas and then farm some of the scripts out to other writers, but they would come back and they would have to come through me because I would have to adjust the voices to the way I knew they sounded. And that's always the case with Mango. It's the case with pretty much everything I write. And maybe it is with most writers. You have a connection with these characters and you know when something is just off key, you know? And like I said in that, Little Bill was so real to me. You know, and I really did. It was a part of wanting to become a dad because I had spent so much time with this little kid and with his brother and sister and with their personalities. And it was just a warm feeling that made me want to, you know, have it in my life for real.
And now you are a dad.
I am a papa, yes.
And we're going to hear about that in just a little while. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. Author for Caswell Hyman is with us today. He's published his first middle grade novel about a 12-year-old girl. Her name is Mango Delight. When we come back from this break, we'll find out what it's like to write as a tween when you're a fully grown man, and how he handles the usual list of suspects of writer obstacles. If you'd like to ask your own question for Caswell Hyman, you can do that during the live Thursday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Author and actor for Caswell Hyman is with us today. His new novel is out now, Mango Delight, published in June by Sterling Children's Books. And we're inviting you to join the conversation, especially fellow creatives. What questions do you have about for Caswell Hyman's process? You can call us during this live Thursday edition at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break for Caswell Hyman, you were telling us about the process of getting to know little Bill and his friends and how you think that had something to do with you wanting to become a father. You are a father now to an 11-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. How did that happen and when did it happen?
Well, 11 years ago. my partner Ricky and I decided that we wanted to be parents. And we found this wonderful organization called Growing Generations in Los Angeles. And we went there, and they guided us through the process of finding a surrogate and doing the whole surrogacy thing. And, you know, it took two tries. You know, our first baby was stillborn.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too. That was a real hard period for me. And you know, like they used to always tell us, the minute you hold your baby in your arms, all of that just goes away. And it did. We had a wonderful surrogate that lived in Simi Valley, and her family took care of her so well. And we got to go to all the doctor's appointments and all that stuff. And we were there in the room when Jemiah was born. That was a great day. My mom had flown out to California to be there, you know, and so I was able, luckily enough, through the work that I had done and the money that it afforded me, to have my dream come true.
And Do you know if she is, if her DNA is yours or your husband's?
The longer her legs get, the more I think, okay, that's his. Because she's got some long legs. Oh, and she's such a pretty thing.
I can't help wondering if Mango Delight, this novel that you published earlier this year, mm-hmm. is based on her in some way. Or what led to the writing of a novel about a 12-year-old girl?
I usually volunteer in the libraries of the schools where Jemiah goes to school. I like doing that, like being around the kids, meeting kids, and, you know. And each year they would have a book fair. And I found that it was very difficult to find a book that had a picture of a girl that looked like her, that was contemporary, that would have some of the same likes and dislikes that she had. I mean, most of the time, you know, there would be a book about an African-American girl who escaped from slavery or someone who's in the civil rights movement. And, you know, those books are fine and they have their place. But where were there books about contemporary girls who were dealing with their own issues and the issues like my daughter? Friendship and family and those kind of things. And so that's what gave me the push to create Mango Delight, because I wanted there to be some books where she could pick up and go, oh, this girl looks like me. This girl likes Beyonce like me. This girl, you know, gets tired of her parents like me.
And, you know, for me, that was one of the neat things about the book is all the different ethnicities, and while those were descriptors of the characters, I don't know how to say this. They didn't define the character. I mean, these were girls that I could relate to, and girls that I knew when I was in school, and faced challenges that I understood.
Well, I'm really happy about that because my daughter goes to school, and it's very, you know, integrated and diverse. And, you know, there are all different kinds of children from different backgrounds, and they get along, you know, and that's what our world is and is going to continue to become more and more of. So hopefully this book reflects that, and kids who read it can say, yeah, I know people like that.
We have an email from Mara who says, I just wanted to share that my 11-year-old daughter Mia read Mango Delight and loved it. Thank you, Mr. Hyman.
Thank you, Mara.
We're talking with Fracaswell Hyman, who's written the book Mango Delight, about a 12-year-old girl who loses her best friend on the way to discovering a more authentic self and her real talents. We're learning about his creative process, about how he stumbled into the life of a writer, and why he says today he's writing for his life. You can ask your own question of Fracaswell Hyman during this live Thursday edition by either calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Gwendolyn from Wilmington asks, how did you manage to get through your novel without getting spooked to not submit or publish it?
Good question. You know, I know that there are these witches that will land in your writing space and try and poke at you and make you feel like you don't know what you're doing and you stink and you shouldn't try it and you should stop. And one of the things that we have to learn, that I think everyone who becomes a professional learns, is how to put them in their place, how to say, listen, get back in the back, sit in the corner, shut up, I'm busy. And you keep writing. You have to let yourself keep writing and not judge as you're writing. It's really important. I'm writing a sequel to Mango right now. I get up in the morning, I go to my office, and I make myself do at least 3.5, maybe 4 pages. And I don't judge them because I know I can always go back and change it. So what I do is I write, and get to the end. Make yourself get to the end and then put it away. I call it, and I hope it for people who are eating, I'm sorry to say this, but I call it my vomit draft. I just let it all out. It's too long. It's too all over the place. That's how it's going to be. Put it away for a month or two if you're lucky, and you come back to it with fresh eyes, and you'll be able to see it's not as bad as you thought, number one, and that there are themes there that you weren't sure that you were writing about at first, but things start to rise to the surface, and then you're able to craft and mold and shape it into a book. And then you have to just, you know, let yourself step out of your comfort zone, find an agent, you know, approach them, write query letters. You have to do that stuff if you're going to make your dream come true. And that's the only way we grow, by stepping out of our comfort zone. So embrace it. Embrace the process, that you know that there's going to be something in your ear that's telling you you are no good, you stink. But say, it's okay, I know, you'll come back when I need you. You know, there's a point when you need that critical part of your brain, but not when you're first generating your story. So that's my advice.
And, you know, when I was reading Mango Delight, I shared this with you before the show. I'm not really a reader of young adult or teen or tween fiction. So frankly, I was not looking forward to diving in. I wanted to meet you and talk to you, but but I found I couldn't put the book down. I was so engaged by Mango and her struggles to be brave and to be herself in this world where it's very tough to be yourself, especially when you're 11 years old or 12 years old. But talk about that a little bit, because I can't help but see some parallels between Mango. She loses her best friend, who is one of the rocks in her life, or so she thinks. But losing that rock actually opens the door to this whole other world of possibilities she could not have engineered.
You know, there's a scene in the book where, after she's lost her friend, her friend has done a really nasty betrayal of her. And Mango thinks it's the end of the world. And her dad says to her, just when you think things are falling apart, they're really falling into place. And I believe that wholeheartedly, because, you know, it always gets better if you stick with it, you know. And when you lose your best friend, yeah, you are suddenly out of your comfort zone. Mango says at one point that she feels like a coat that fell on the floor, and all the rest of the coats are on the hangers up above her, and she's the one that fell on the floor, you know, with nobody by her side, nobody to have lunch with, nobody to walk home with, nobody to call after school and gab on the phone with. But that's a transition period, and we all go to transition periods where things in our lives change. And if we hold on and stick to it and find our courage, doors open, windows open, things will get better. That's what I believe. That's what I try to say to my daughter, and that's what I'm hoping children get out of this book.
And there's this moment when she can I talk about this? It's not a spoiler if I talk about her going to an audition, or is it?
No, it's not a spoiler, because I don't think that the audience is listening right now. They're in school.
That's a great point. All right. So she loses her best friend. She finds herself at an audition for the school play, which she never intended to audition herself. Mm-hmm. And suddenly her name is called. Somebody's put her on the list as a mean joke. Mm-hmm. And she gets up, and talk about her decision to actually get up and walk onto that stage, that moment. And then she sings.
She's never sung in front of anybody, but she always loved to sing. And she, in that moment, when her ex-best friend played this trick on her by signing her up to audition, she thinks, well, either I can run and hide and cry in the bathroom, but that way she wins. If I get up there on that stage and do it, then at least I wouldn't have let her beat me. So she uses what she calls her stubborn streak to find her courage and get up on stage. And the teacher asks her if she has any music, and she says no. And he says, okay, well, you're going to sing a cappella. And she says, I don't know that song. He says, it's not a singing, it means singing without music. So she's totally green. But she closes her eyes, she pretends she's in her bathroom singing into her hairbrush, and she does a job that astounds the people. And she triumphs in that moment.
And that was one of the key things for me, is that she went to this place where she knew she could sing. Mm-hmm. And that was in her own bathroom, mm-hmm. singing into her hairbrush. Mm-hmm. She went to that place, and then she let it out and astonished everyone.
Yes. She went to a place that was comfortable for her in that uncomfortable situation. And there are many times when you have to, you know, convince yourself that you are in a comfortable place when you're in a situation that's strange for you. Like right now, I had to say, okay, Cass, you're just going in there. You're going to sit and you're going to have a conversation with Rachel Lewis Hilburn, your old friend, although we've never met before. But, you know, you give yourself that space. You create the space. That person that wrote in about writing and finishing something,
yes.
Create that space where you are a novelist and where you can sit down and say, yes, I can breathe and be comfortable and do this and have confidence.
Okay, we've got a lot of questions coming in right now. We're talking with author and actor for Caswell Hyman. He's written a new book called Mango Delight about a 12-year-old who loses her best friend on the way to discovering her destiny. He's talking about his creative process, about the book. If you have a question for Caswell that you'd like to ask during this live Thursday show, you can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Woody from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello, Kaz. It's Woody.
Hey, Francis. We did the Odd Couple together. I'm good, man. I'm good. He played Oscar. I played Felix.
And you did the Odd Couple here in Wilmington.
Yes, at Big Dog.
At the Cape Fear Playhouse.
Yep.
Hi, my friend. It's wonderful to hear your voice. And I'm in the middle of reading the book. And what's interesting to me is it's giving me some perspective of looking at relationships in a different way as a 50-year-old man, looking how Mango deals with stuff. So that's one interesting thing I'm getting out of reading, a teen novel. But my question for you is, do you see any sequels in Mango's future growing from a teenager into adulthood?
You know, originally I had sketched out ideas for 5 books that were going to take her from this point where she learns that she can stand up and perform in front of people through her career. I'm writing number 2 now. I'm actually not just starting. I just did chapter 15 this morning. So, yeah, that would be ideal for me. The publishing company asked if I wanted to do another one. So I'm, in the middle of this one now. And hopefully they will stick with me because I just had this whole life of pain and triumph mapped out for her.
Well, that is wonderful. Congratulations.
Thanks, Woody.
Thanks so much for your call, Woody. We're talking with for Caswell Hyman. He's written a book called Mango Delight. We have an email from Jim who says, my wife and I saw for Caswell in 2 trains. That was the August Wilson play that was just at theater now. He says, I really enjoyed that play. We hope to see him on the stage again soon here in Wilmington. We have a 12-year-old niece, and we'll get this book for her ASAP. Is there any place where Mr. Hyman will be signing books this weekend, he says.
Ooh. Well, I don't have anything scheduled this weekend, but let me know where I can meet you. I'll sign it for you. They have them at Barnes & Noble.
We have an email from Lucinda who says, Mango Delight is such a culturally relevant novel given the world tweens are growing up in. How do you think the character of Mango will help you with your own child rearing?
Well, hopefully Mango's resilience will inspire my daughter because Mango doesn't give up. She's often at a crossroads. She doesn't know if what she's doing is right. And she might not always do the right things, even though she's doing them for the right reasons. But she doesn't give up and she pushes herself to stay honest, which is not always easy to do. Because there are consequences sometimes when you might have to hurt someone's feelings. And so I hope, in a way that Mango can be a role model, that you can make mistakes, you can do things that are wrong, but if you are courageous and persistent, it'll come out okay.
Lucinda raises an interesting idea about your writing and your writing informing your life. Mm-hmm. Have you ever found yourself in a place where, we've heard about people channeling Eleanor Roosevelt for advice being as a first lady or, have you ever channeled wisdom through your writing? Has your writing ever kind of given you an aha moment beyond just the creative product that you're making and led you to, here's the clarity I needed on that issue? Or do you just go into this alternate universe and it's sort of your creative
there's a time that I find things that surprise me in the writing that I didn't expect to be there. I mean, in the book, Mango's mom has a disability. She lost one of her legs. And I don't really know where that came from, or I didn't when I was writing. I just knew I saw that character, and I just wanted to represent a person with a disability that didn't let it hold them back, a role model for her daughter and for, you know, other readers. And after the book was out and it had been accepted by a publishing company, and I was thinking about it one day, and I was like, oh, that represents something in my life that I'm not going to reveal, but there is a part of me in my life, a part of me that is almost like not having a piece of a limb, but I've always had to keep going, you know, even in spite of that. So things pop up in books sometimes that I don't really realize why they're there or why they're important to me, but they mean something that I had that was unexpected.
Do you ever struggle to get through a project? And we have Darcelle on the line, and we're going to get to her, I think, when we come back from this break. But do you ever struggle to finish a project? You're not feeling the magic. You're grinding it out, and you get it done. And then there's a better critical reception, or it's a better piece than you expected. Or is there always a correlation between really getting into that creative flow and how it's received in the world?
Wow, that's a big question. Both of those things have happened to me. So, yeah.
You've ground it out, and then people have said, this is really good.
Yeah, and that encouragement can bring you back.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. The author of Mango Delight for Caswell Hyman is with us today. We're learning about his journey on the road to finding his creative voice as a writer, what led to a career as a writer and executive producer at Nickelodeon, and how you wound up writing a novel for tweens. After this break, you'll have one more segment to call in and ask your own question for Caswell Hyman. During the live Thursday edition, 910-343-1138 is how you can do that, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back, we'll hear from Darcelle. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking with author and actor for Caswell Hyman about his life as a writer, his first middle grade novel, Mango Delight, and how he deals with the obstacles that inevitably plague creatives. If you have your own question for Caswell Hyman, you can ask it during this live Thursday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And just a reminder, this is the last segment, so you only have a few more minutes to get your question in. For Caswell Hyman, you wanted to raise a topic.
I just wanted to touch on what we were talking about before, about sometimes when you grind to a halt and you don't know where to go.
Yeah.
I'm doing a novel that's a literary fiction novel, and I just turned it into my agent a few months ago, and he came back with a suggestion. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. But then I started it, and I just came to a standstill. And then that's the period where you need to just put it down and let it go. And it took me about 2 months of doing other things until one day I was walking in the park with my dog, and I thought, boom, that's the answer. That's where it needs to go. And I went back, and boom, it just all came back out. So if you get to a point where you're stuck, you've got to just give yourself a chance to breathe and open yourself up to things around you. And sometimes it just surprises you, and you'll find the answers that you're looking for. So trust. Trust and believe.
And we are going to hear from Darcelle in Leland. Darcelle, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Rachel, and congratulations, Mr. Caswell, on Mango Delight.
Thank you.
Ashe, ashe. I am Gullah Geechee. You know, I have that background in my family. And I was wondering, with the Mango Delight series, would you consider perhaps in the future a musical, a movie that you can come back here for, cinema noir or Cuckoloris? And because you're writing about tweens, I thought it'd be wonderful that your series can turn to be something as successful as Wimpy Kid, so we could always, like, yearly expect something from your creative process that we can send for gifts for Kwanzaa and the such. And one last thing, since you were in New York at the time of with the Children's Creative Workshop, did you happen to know a fellow thespian, Anne Lee? Because you were in New York around that same time. She's from Chicago originally and ended up in Boston. So I just wondered if you knew if your paths intersected.
No, I don't think so.
But Darcel has just laid out your career here for the next 20 years. So, Darcel, he'll be calling you after the show to hire you as his agent / publicity agent.
Can't do that.
I would love to bring another Mango story out each year. I love her. I love her family. And I think that it would be fun for kids to follow her life, just like my daughter followed Harry Potter, you know, and she just loved that whole series. So I'd love to do that.
Darcel, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with author and actor Frank Haswell Hyman about his new novel, Mango Delight, which was just published by Sterling Children's Books this past June, and it is available in Barnes & Noble, I've heard.
Barnes & Noble,
also
Amazon,
on Amazon, yes. That's right. We have a call from Ricardo in Wilmington. Oh, Ricky wants to say hello to Frank Haswell. I understand the two of you know each other.
Yes.
Hi there.
I'm on.
Hello. Yes, you are. Yes, hello.
Hi. I was just calling to tell you that I'm very, very proud of you and just keep going, okay? Mango is a delight. And you know I love mangoes already.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ricardo. Good to hear from you. So I also can't help seeing parallels between the show Taina, which was part of your career at Nickelodeon, and the novel Mango Delight. You talk about Taina, the premise of this show, a teenage girl goes to the School of the Arts to learn the craft of acting, but she wants to accelerate her journey to becoming a star. It's less about the process for her, or so she thinks. Mm-hmm. She wants to be a star. Can you just talk about what kinds of misadventures came from that and what some of the lessons were from Taina?
Taina was funny because in a way, it was created by my good friend Maria Perez Brown. And it was such a natural fit for me to work on that show because, like I mentioned to you earlier, when I was in high school, I got into theater, and that was just like such a wonderful part of my life. And so I put that whole theater group, what we call the drama nerds, into the book about Mango. But Taina was kind of a Puerto Rican I Love Lucy in a way, because she was always trying whatever scheme she could to get into show business, to skip over all the hard work that you have to do to become an actor, singer, dancer, and become famous, you know. So it was fun putting in her in those different kinds of predicaments and pretending she was different people so that she could get in to meet somebody important. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, that series.
And you also talk a lot about the process that Mango goes through in the mm-hmm. book to become an actress, which was interesting because I think only an actor could write that way about what someone goes through when they're learning lines and what that sort of that moment is when you break the wall between the lines and actually living the character.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons I wanted to do this was to actually kind of pull the curtain back on what it takes. A lot of kids watch shows on Nickelodeon or Disney Channel, and they see these actors and they think that it's all easy and it all comes really fast, but it takes a lot of work, especially for child actors, because not only do they have to perform and be in scenes and learn lines, but they have to go to school too. So you have a trailer where there's a tutor, and they have to work pretty much harder than anyone. So in taking Mango on the journey that she does, that she will take from middle school as her career continues and climbs, I'm hoping to expose what that world is like and what it takes to really become a professional.
You write about Taina, that show. By the time the fall came around and Taina's production was wrapping, it was time to gear up the Little Bill Machine again, another show that you worked on for Nickelodeon. You say, I must confess I was on the edge of total burnout. It was heartbreaking for me, but had to give up my duties on Little Bill to recharge my batteries. Can you just talk about what burnout meant, what it looked like to you, and how you knew that that's what it was?
I was working on Little Bill in New York, and Tyena started to go into production. So we were on, I think, the fifth floor. One side of the hallway were all the Little Bill offices, and the other side were all the Tyena offices. And as head writer on both of those shows, I had to generate story ideas. I had to go through scripts. I had to write scripts. I had to, you know, edit scripts. And right after Little Bill closed, we moved down to Florida to shoot the first season of Tyena and at Nickelodeon Studios. And when you're working in television production and you're a producer and a writer, it's 16-hour days, 6 days a week, you know? And I had not had a break. And as much as I love what I do, at the end of the first season of Tyena, I was so tired and weary, had no personal life. You know, I wasn't really healthy because I wasn't, you know, doing things to take care of myself. And just the idea of having to turn right around and go right back to work was terrifying.
So it was a moment when it was how you felt about work, this work that you supposedly loved, and suddenly you just thought, oh,
I love it. I just didn't have any more to give. And as much as I loved Little Bill and the people that I worked with on that show, I just couldn't imagine coming up with a whole new season of premises at that point.
So then how did you fill your creative reservoir? When you approach burnout, when anyone does, how do you know it's coming before it escalates to the point of being a crisis?
I think you know it's coming when you just have to stop, you know, when you feel like you're pushing. There's a book called Bird by Bird where the author, and oh my gosh, I'll get it to you, but Bird by Bird is a great book for writers about writing. And in the book, she describes when she's writing that it's like her desk kind of elevates and just levitates up through the ceiling and up past the trees and up into the sky. And that's a feeling that you really do get when you're in it, you know? It's not harsh. It's not work. It's just like it's a wonderful place where you don't even realize how much time has gone by. But when that doesn't happen anymore and you're just grounded on the ground and you're just trying to just, you know, push something out, then you know you need a break. And that's when I've been able to, you know, step away and do a play, you know, do something else that's going to nourish me creatively, see a bunch of movies, go to the CAM and, you know, look at the new exhibits, read, of course. You know, reading is necessary.
What kinds of things do you read?
Oh, man. You see, I love reading big, thick books about generations of families. You know, I love Ann Tyler. Meg Wolitzer, there's this book called The Interestings that was just like right up my alley. I love that. I love Toni Morrison. I like books that get under the skin of the characters. My novel that I've written called A Maze of Stunted Trees is a book like that. It's about a family that leaves the South, moves to New York, and it follows them through four decades. Big book. But that, you know, Toni Morrison says, write what you want to read. So that's what I love. I love getting involved in a book so that when I wake up in the morning, I wonder what is happening to her now? What is he doing now? And I just have to get back to it.
Caroline asks, how is your creative writing process different while writing a novel versus writing for film or TV?
I don't think there is much of a difference. The difference is the format. You know, when you're writing it in a script, you know, you've got your slug line, your action line, your character line, and your dialogue. I find there's a lot more freedom in writing the novel because then I can write what's going on inside the character, and I can take my time and let that character really, you know, feel what they're feeling and express that to the reader. In film and television, you have to make it visual, you know, and that's a different, it's a different skill. I mean, but I think you, at least for me, the only difference really is the format. And, you know, you got to think a little different when you make it visual and there's like shortcuts. But no, I it's kind of the same space that I go to.
You moved to Wilmington about 4 years ago now, and you moved from Los Angeles.
Yes.
That is a big cultural shift to get, and you were raised in Brooklyn, New York. So, you know, that living in these very large metropolitan areas that are also kind of the seats of creativity in so many different ways, especially in show business and in writing and film and TV. What is it like? Is it something of an adjustment to come to a small town in the South and make your home here?
Well, you know, we look for the adjustments in life. You know, stepping into Wilmington was stepping out of my comfort zone, which is something that I've been trained to do all my life because I never knew anyone who was a writer. I didn't grow up around anyone who was an actor, but, you know, you just, that's who you are. And coming to Wilmington, I moved here because my mom was having health issues and I wanted to be around to help her out. And I found my tribe. You know, I started taking classes at OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Center at UNCW, and met a lot of really great like-minded people. And I started teaching there. I taught a class called Story of Your Life, where we use guided autobiography to help people write their life stories 2 pages at a time. It was a fantastic experience. I just met so many wonderful people. And so, no, the only really big adjustment was getting used to this humidity and the mosquitoes that keep me in the house because my daughter and I, they just like to feast on us. You know, we have sweet meat, I guess, because we can't step outside without getting attacked. But that was the biggest adjustment. I just, you know, I like the people that I've met. I'm close to my mom. I have my family with me, and I have creative outlets, you know? I can do theater here. I hadn't done theater in 20 years before I moved back to Wilmington. And there's a great theater community in this town. You guys are so lucky. They're just people that do it for the love of it. And that's
Is that different from L.A. for you?
L.A., everybody's on the hustle. Everybody wants to be a star, you know, and they're all jockeying for position. Here, people are doing it because they love it. Nobody's going to come down here and, you know, say, I'm going to make a TV series about you. I doubt that. I'm just doing it because it's fun.
Was there ever a struggle as a writer in L.A. to stay true to the voice and not get caught up in the hustle yourself?
Yes. You know, there are always compromises that you have to make. And you have to, at a certain point, say, I'm not going to cross a particular line or find a way to find a comfortable space within that compromise. And I've had to do that in my career. The first show I created was for Disney Channel, and it was called The Famous Jet Jackson. And to get a show picked up, you know, by a big network like Disney is a huge job, and it's backbreaking, gut-wrenching, but we got it on. But there was some serious compromises and some serious battles that I had. But you choose your battles, and you move forward, and it became a very successful series, I'm happy to say.
How do you choose your battles? Because I've heard some writers say, oh, I was so close a few times to a couple of big deals, but they wanted me to make this compromise, and I wasn't going to do it because that's not what my story was about. Or, you know, that's how do you know when it's time to say, okay, I'm willing to let in that compromise, or no, that would be selling out in a way that takes away the, you know, my uniqueness.
Tune in next time.
We will have to do that when you come out with your sequel for Mango Delight.
That'd be wonderful. I've enjoyed myself. Thank you so much.
Oh, for Caswell Hyman, what a pleasure having you on today. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell, associate producer Rachel Keith, production assistant is Caitlin Hanrahan, Caroline DeVries is our webmaster, and today's call screener. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.